Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant, and
we are a group on allpoetry.com, and if you wander into allpoetry.com, get yourself a free account and you'll be welcomed at the door. And the key welcomer in chief is Deborah Lee. Hi Deb, how are you?
I'm good. I like that key welcomer in chief. That's cute.
Thank you very much.
How are you?
You can use that. No, I'm good. Thank you. No, I'm in good shape. So and we should, of course, also welcome our other co-host, Jay Hatter, the person who is responsible for the words that Shout Even Shy was just singing. Jay Hatter, how are you?
I'm just fine, AP. Thank you.
Excellent. And I should say that this will be the last show while I am in Australia for the next little period of time. I am going for a holiday. So the next time you hear me, it will be from the hallowed halls of the Shangri-La in Singapore. And I shall be there doing the show for that week, and then I shall return to the humble abode of Australia. And so that is why I have the brand new luggage from a local provider, I hasten to add,
Australian luggage company called July.com.au. Not that you could get it over in America or anywhere else. You can only get it here in Melbourne. But brilliant stuff. So I've got that. It's not chocolate, by the way, which is our theme. It's sort of military, sort of deep olive green, but it's nice looking tea cases. I'm getting ready to pack them up. And it's got nothing to do, though, with me having a special event. It's just got time for me to be away. And I have to say, it apparently is a while ago, but it was Ali's birthday and we missed it. So happy birthday, Ali, who's listening. Meantime, I have got Stephen in the studio. How are you, Stephen?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I am very, very well. And we have a poem from you that is going to start us off tonight. So I'm just going to put that up on the board. That's good, except, of course, Deb's already done it. So, Stephen, the poem is up on the board. It's all yours.
All right. Well, you can't think of chocolate without thinking of Willy Wonka. And was inspired by the fact that Kay really likes the Nerds candies, and for a while they disappeared off the shelf. When they finally came back, they no longer said Wonka candies on the back. They said somebody else. So Wonka candies is no more. So that kind of inspired this piece.
Okay.
And this is called Wonka Candies Are No More as Poor Management Slams the Door. Juddering as heat boils beneath starch collar, gripping ferrule with diamond-producing pressure. Lower lip bulges and daughters veiling gritted teeth, barms from tube behind lids without measure. Porch rocking chair creaks floorboards, breeze flutters great follicles neath top hat. Eyes glare at adjacent confectionery works, watching smoke and steam subside from stacks. Title unfastened and thrown to curb, auric fowl beheaded and baked. Fondant rillet dried up into tar, showing bones of those brats now forsake. Vertically challenged orange skin frowns, slowly shuffle unemployment line. Bonbons and saplings now melt in the sun, fizzy flyers now flat, putrefied. That pleasant young boy who had won it all, yes, that boy with the golden locks, he ran Wonka's factory into the ground. Now Willie sits with worthless stocks. A foreclosure notice crumpled in his hand as he watches the taxi pull up. Limping to back seat, he loses his cane and flips to the sidewalk face up. Screaming in pain and pent-up disgrace, he spits Charlie's name to the sky. Feeling his heart beat and breathing slow, Candyman squints shut his eyes and dies.
Candyman.
Well, it doesn't matter whether you're in the business of candy or if you're in the business of dandy, you just have to still make a buck out of doing what you're doing, Steve, you know? And you hand it to an inexperienced, although, you know, perfectly decent-looking young kid, you have to think that that's one of the possible outcomes. You know, I mean, this is not a person who understands the ins and the outs of cocoa. He just sort of got the golden ticket, you know, and hit the lift button. So, and if you think about it, he was really the only person left. Everybody else ruled themselves out. So, you know, wasn't exactly the best way to go about finding, you know, something that would keep it going, and I think you sort of covered it pretty well here. So, Hatter, did you want to say a few words?
Okay, well, let me get this straight. Willie screwed up?
Well, no, because he handed it over to the kid, and the kid screwed up.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah?
To the kids.
Charlie Buckley.
Well, that's Charlie, the guy who inherited the factory, you see.
Oh, Charlie, yeah.
He was a nice looking kid, but, yeah, he was a nice looking kid. He just couldn't run a factory, you know.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, now you got it. You got it, Hatter?
I think so.
Okay, good. Meanwhile, I'm going to go to Deb. Deb, what did you think of the end of Wonka?
Well, you know, I kind of really like the fact that he tied the nerds into the continuation of the story. It was nerds that you said, right? The nerds.
Yes.
Yep.
But I like that he takes over, gets rid of the nerds, drives the company into the ground. The foreclosure notice is crumbled in his hand. It was just like a really, really cool way to continue out the story. And the Candyman squint shuts his eyes. And for some reason, I was thinking, you know, uh-oh, what if they say that two more times, you know, Candyman, and then he dies. But no, I really, really like the angle that you took on this. And when you were reading, I could tell that you really liked the angle that you took, because there was a smile in your voice when you were reading. Really cool, Chair.
Thanks, Bill.
You're absolutely right. I hadn't even noticed that, Stephen, that the nerds had lost their wonkiness, but they have, even here. That sort of
yep.
Wonka sort of brand is gone, Ski. You know? It's gone somewhere south.
Yep, now it's called, I have it in the author's notes, Ferrera Candy Company. And Kay
Ferrera
says that the nerds don't
yeah.
Where they...
European producer. Yeah. Anyways, now that we've sort of headed past and commented on the decline of Wonka, can we talk about what's happening with Poetic Slice of Life in the next series of days?
Sure, let me... get over to our little schedule. I know our next show, of course, is The Mortuary of Shadows on Monday, 7:30 p.m.
Yep.
Eastern. That is going to be our next monthly visit with Edgar Allan Poe. And we are looking at the short story, Never Bet the Devil with Your Head. We have quotes
Ooh.
From that story to inspire your pen.
That's
quite an interesting story. I think it's available on YouTube. It's only like 25 minutes to listen to the whole thing in an audio book. Check it out. It's definitely a very dark story. That's all of our
yeah,
all
right.
Is ours, but
for sure.
But yeah, it's fun.
Excellent. Okay. Well, now while you might have you might need to disappear straight away, but if you don't, we do have a collaboration this week, Stephen. So. If you did want to hang around, we would get the collaboration on next. So if you would like to even be around for that,
yeah, I'll hang out for that, and then I gotta take off.
Okay, cool, right. Okay, so we have every week, mostly when we get together. Patter and get her act together. We do some words to a picture that is independent of each other, and then we place them into the hands of Deborah Lee, and Deb has the task of putting together a poem. So, Deb, we're in your hands.
Cool. And you know, I have to wonder now, after poem number 76, if you guys could write this fantastic talking to each other ahead of time, because, man, you got another 10, and although I switched a few words around, it's all you guys. And I really, really like this one. Anyway, it's called Too Many
okay.
Toys for Two Imaginative Boys. Here we go. With space suits on horses, singing space songs, waiting to follow the train for real, circus bark drummers, tucked away wolves, but maybe some missed a seal. In the boxes of memories that take me there, there's a large liner with a skate key, stored with bird feathers when they cannot fly off the duck, the penguin, and the chicken I see. Spot those ducks in tuxedos standing in line to fly in tin rocket ships going around. They are climbing the ladder to travel away, while Jumbo stands firmly, 5 toes on the ground. Now follow the spaceman to breathe his air, then ride the carousel and mystery tunnel with the robotic sentries keeping the peace by the spaceship that looks like a funnel. Atomic toy resonators are given away just as the motorbike is about to jump. Future car models on alien rope swings or over the racing cars ready to pump. Toys made of wishes always come true, and the future car dukes it out with robots. Heroes on cluttered shelves and storage finds. All these metal toys lead into multiple plots. And pump.
We did that nicely.
That was kind of funky.
We did that nicely. I think that was a really good example of a really good image for us, Deb, because each of us found our own way because we each found our own way and we always intersect somewhere in the midst of that, we actually got something that was really quite neat and doesn't sound like it was terribly hard to put together.
No, not at all. And it's sort of just like I've said this before, but I usually take the rhymes and pair them up and then see what they match with best and jiggle them around a little bit. And I admit that I was going in a different direction for the ending. And then there was just something about leaving it with those multiple plots that worked, so I switched it around some. But, I mean, I really love how it flows right from spacesuits on the horses to the memories in the box. It was just, you mentioned the ducks, penguins and chickens, and then he says the ducks and tuxedos standing in line. It was just like, okay, you each pull in a little bit of differentness, and you both always bring enough, like you just said. But this was definitely easier than most, and I really, really like it. And I was, like I said, it's another 10 for the collab column. So
there you go, Hedda. What did you think of that?
So how far did you get, Deb, when you had, when I gave you those
Not at
lines.
All, Hatter. Not at all. I read the lines and I thought, what the hell is this man looking at? There has never been a time where I couldn't picture some of the art I sent you until then. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not sure what this man's looking at, but it's definitely not the art. And there's no way I could have worked what you wrote there to whatever it was out in the ether and combined it. So it's definitely the fact that you have the piece of art in common. It's not mental telepathy because, I don't even know, Heather.
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know what happened. But when you got
and
back
in case
the picture,
you guys aren't following, he sent me 12 lines, and I'm like, what the hell did he write to? There was cats and clowns and hats, and I'm like, wait, I don't remember any clowns or cats. So,
wow. Okay.
Among other
Thank
things.
Thank God for that. Changed up. Stephen, what did you think, as the person who has had nothing to do with this piece of production of work, of this particular poem?
Well, I like it. I like it a lot. First off, I have to talk about the picture a little bit because it brings back some memories, some of those old toys that I see in there, some of them I may have had. And I think that the collaboration, to me, it does an excellent job of bringing back those old imagination-powered toys back to life. I think that I think it's very cool, very well done.
I love that you said that, Stephen, because that's where it took me for the title, for the imaginative boys, because like that's what I wanted them to pull in some memories and stuff, and they couldn't, in my opinion, they couldn't have sent more perfect words because. I love this one.
Yeah, I think we got this one, Hatter. I think we got this one. And strange how it works that way sometimes, but I think we actually got this one.
And it got a 10?
It did.
Wow.
Yeah, it did. Got a 10 too. Yeah, can't argue with that.
And I don't usually take away words, but I did in, well, I'm sure you'll, if you look better, you would notice, but just to make it flow, because the cadence was even there pretty much on its own. So I was like, geez. So I finished fixing it. But for the most part, it came that way. I think when I hit the button the first time, it didn't like the commas, and I took them all away,
right,
and it scored a 10.
There you go. There you go. Can't ask for better than that, Adder. You get a 10, you put it together, words, you know, everything. So thank you to Stephen too. Right, he's just dropped, but thank you to Stephen for his comments and for coming along and for putting a poem in. And we have actually a few poems tonight, Hannah. We've got one from Gerald Green that I've always been excited about, having Gerald on the show. And we've got Pretty Bird that I exchanged a few notes about with all the stuff that's been going on in Florida. And we've, of course, got Deb, and we've got me, but I don't see your poem on the board, Hannah.
Oh, I didn't put it over there. Hold on. Let me go get it. I'm sorry.
So we need to put your poem on the board.
Okay.
Maybe while we're doing that, I can have a bit of a treat and have Gerald's poem. So since Gerald sent us a SoundCloud in and sent his poem in. So why don't we do Gerald's poem while you're putting yours on the board, Adam?
No, that's fine.
Okay, right on. Well, let's play that now. He's got a SoundCloud, and here's Gerald.
Welcome to Gerald Green Poetry. Chocolate, written and read by Gerald Green. How can I describe my love affair with one so sweet? One who was molded into seductive forms and combined with friends of texture and taste. I think back to our first kiss, a time of innocence ended by a growing desire to taste and know what gods enjoy and what lays hidden within shiny wrappers. Virgin teeth slowly press against willing flesh that eagerly succumbs to hesitant but curious aggression, carefully pursuing with selfish intent. The flavor of cocoa, milk, and sugar meld into an intoxicating mixture, increasing heart rate and flow of saliva. Endorphins then release into momentary bliss. My eyes close as the bite tightens, and a piece floats into the channel of hope, sliding across cells, awakening with euphoric sensation, feelings of lust heretofore unknown. The movement of each morsel, exaggerated by inebriating essence, extends the climax of infatuation, opening the door to love and promise of eternal intimacy. The hidden almond inside surprises the tentative jaw, but invites it to overcome resistance with crushing force, adding to newly found hedonistic pleasure. A height of emotion is quickly reached, exceeding all previous feeling, as primitive impulses surface to consummate the new relationship. One that will survive darkness and competition from unexpected directions. And so, I think of you and remember that moment long ago when we first met. End poem.
Well, one would say...
Visit YouTube for more Gerald Green poetry.
Sorry, Gerald. I didn't know you had that in the video. I have to say that Gerald enjoys chocolate somewhat, just a little bit. And you get that sense of of beauty and love and passion for something, and it's just wonderful to have your dulcet tones back with us again, Gerald. Yeah, what did you think of Gerald and chocolate?
Yeah, the way he toyed with the subject and put the sensual undertones through it was a real treat. And like, this was last year when I heard him do it the first time. So it was quite daring for him, and I was really impressed. I think that he got us to where, like, almost the middle before he put the little nod in there for the cocoa, milk, and sugar. But I love that you also mentioned that kiss, because, like, from the immediate area up here, chocolate kisses are, like, the best, and they come in that little foil thing. And so it's just like there's little endearing parts of it. And, again, the sensual undertones and his voice. No matter what he reads, he's got such a crisp, clear reading voice that it's a, you know, flawless read every time. I'm glad he sent this one in. Thanks, Gerald.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gerald takes his poetry seriously, very seriously, and it shows in his work. It's a true hallmark. You put it up, the history of chocolate, you know, and have one of the tales of it, the history of chocolate throughout the years. It's nicely done. In my mind, and only in my mind, I wanted it to rhyme so badly. But it doesn't need to.
Yeah.
That happens to you a lot,
yeah.
Tyler.
It does.
Yeah.
It occurs.
They happen. Hello, Hatter.
Am I still here?
Oh.
Yeah, it got real quiet on me.
Yeah.
I think my internet jumped.
Ah, maybe. So, anyways. Now, Hatter, you've got your poem up on the board next. Yeah. So I was thinking we might get you to read next. Or you may want to say to me that you may want me to read it, just depending on where you're up to.
Well, I think there's some cadence issues, so I'm going to give it a try.
Okay. Cool.
You know what? No, if you could, would you go ahead and read? I don't have my eyes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, we can do that. And this is by Hatter, only a couple of hours ago. They call it Le Chocolat, and it goes a little bit like this. The story is told about things like gold that saved a town from slowly dying. Then came a man they did not understand, but learned how to never stop trying. What had left the town and what was missing, no holding hands, no flirting, no one was kissing. Upon a storm that blew for days, a ship was wrecked, now pounded by waves. Upon the shore, a survivor was seen, along with kegs of a magical bean. He spoke in tongues they could not understand. This stranger they found, a very young man. He saw the love that was noticeably missing, no holding hands, no touch, no flirtatious kissing. So to work, he began to share his trade, something so sweet, this thing that he made. The samples were given right out of the kitchen to the king so he would taste, for his queen did agree to share with no time to waste. The men stood dumbfounded, not a clue, but the stranger told them exactly what to do. What ribbons and bows, as the story is told, the men gave out to the girls. Things so sweet they gave to eat, something that would rock their world. The women, you see, would get more frisky and disappear for hours and hours. Boxes with roses, all that they know is a bean that had magical powers. Where love was missing, there was no kissing. In the town, they called off Le Bon Le Tot. Back came the affection from this candy confection. They called it Le Chocolat.
Thank you.
You see that?
There wasn't any problem. There wasn't any
problem.
That's what
I was just going to say. When it's that easy for somebody else to just sit up and read it, you know it was great.
Yeah.
I'm glad you got the name of the town right. I'm glad you got the name of the town right. Forgot about that.
Thanks very much. I think the interesting thing, Hatter, is that you've got probably three or four different ways that you rhyme, and this piece has a combination of all of the above, you know. So it's got AA rhyme, it's got an ABAB rhyme, it's got a ABCBA rhyme, you know. So there's a variety of ways that you rhyme things, but you always do it within the rhythm of the poem. And so because you do that, it becomes a natural sort of flow when you read it, as you heard.
You read it well. Thank you.
Thank you. I thought it went down the page really well, Peter. I did. I think, you know, you were telling a story about chocolate, and you were telling a story about how it sort of influenced people and its effect on people. And I think the way that you did that was really effective in the poem.
It's based on a story that I had read, and it's got some factual truth to it.
Right.
During a storm, one of the ships that was bringing back the cocoa beans wrecked on the shore.
Yeah,
interesting. And so, I don't know where that was.
No, that's cool. Deb, what did you think of Hatter's Pits?
Well, I like the story that's throughout it, and like, you know, the girl getting the boxes with roses, and they all know is a bean that had magical powers. And the flow there, that back at the beginning, we had left the town, and what was missing? No holding hands, no flirting, no one was kissing. And there was a bit of a sadness there, and then upon a storm that blew for days, a ship was wrecked, pounded by waves. I would drop the now, just saying. But, like, Hatter, you are one of the easiest poets to read for because of how, well, we call it that classic Hatter rhyme, but because you're always crystal clear with your cadence, it's like... It takes one couplet to pull your pattern and be able to read, and that's pretty good. Sometimes I admit, even I, like, I'll force the pronunciation of something because I really want a specific word there. And it wouldn't sound the same if somebody read for me, but because yours is spot on, nothing has to be forced. Except that now is driving me crazy. Sorry. Great poem.
Thank you, Deborah.
You're welcome, Hatter.
Well, Deb, we're going to probably do about an hour show today. And so, Hatter, I'm putting you on notice that we need to get a topic, you know, for next week.
Oh, yeah.
So didn't have a chance to talk about that. So if you want to think about that. And, Deb, I was going to read Pretty Bird's poem because I don't think we've got a SoundCloud for that.
We do not.
Okay.
So please do.
Well, that's okay. Pretty Bird, you're going to have to put up with me. So I'll read Pretty Bird's poem, and then we'll have your poem and then my poem. Deb? I think
sounds
that's
like
the way we go. And we should be home and hosed in the hour, because I know that you've got things to do also. So there we go. Okay. This is Pretty Bird. Thanks for your comments during the week too, Pretty Bird. I'm glad to see that you're in one piece after the very nasty storm that went through Florida. This is He Promised Me Heaven in Taste of Hell. Goes a little bit like this. He promised me ecstasy, and I fell for the decadence in his eyes, which promised my tongue a taste of heaven. Devils fight angels in heated air, begging to be coated in sultry hues of married flavours. He is of the light. I play best in nightshade hues that feed the devils in my lair. Impatiently I follow, urgently, eagerly. I lap the thought of how it lingers. I enter trying to hide the moist anticipation that scents the air in tantalizing expectation of ecstasy promised. And whilst toward me I approach excitement rising, just to be told they just sold the last devil's food cake. In pop. There you go. Go the devil food. Deb, did you want to say a few words about Pretty Bird's Place?
Yes, I love the devilish little twist at the end there, that piece of cake. Another right where I really got a kick out of the sensual undertones and the promises of ecstasy from the very beginning that leads us down and is teasing us all the way through till it's a piece of cake and it's gone. I thought this came out really cool and like there's sort of a my heart's breaking for her loss of that piece of cake. Really, really cool.
Yeah, I agree. Really, really funky. Oh, thank you. And Hannah, what did you think of Pretty Bird's Place?
Yeah, I get it too, what Deb said. The hell in relation to the devil and devil's food cake. And then I went back and said, is there a reference to angels at all? And there isn't.
Yes.
Let's see.
Yes.
But it's, yeah, put together. I love the ending. Not expecting it, really.
Yeah, that was a good ending. I agree. And I have to admit that at the minute, it's not a chocolate thing that's working for me, Patter, that I have that reaction to. It's not devil food cake. There is a Basque cheesecake, and it's full of ricotta cheese, and it comes in the form of a cake, and it's got me. I just love the bloody thing, you know. I buy four of them. You know, I don't care what they're worth. Doesn't matter. These things are just the bee's knees. Basque cheesecake. Ha, oh, man. They're just beautiful. Anyway, devil's food cake, Basque cheesecake. You know, not far away from each other. Now, Deb, we are going to grab your poem next and put it up on the board. And that is All Brown Is Not Chocolate by Deborah Lee and is going up on the board as we speak. And it should be on the page now, Deb.
Okay, cool. And I think it's about time that I treated everyone to something that should not make them hungry, hungry by the time I'm done reading, just saying.
Okay.
And yes, this is called All Brown Is Not Chocolate. Here we go. March dumps white powdered bucket loads, blanketing backyards, schools, and roads. Children build snowman and an igloo. Puppies dump piles that stick to the shoe. The turd frees to popsicle dog poo. Battles run from the afternoon into twilight at the snowball fights by the bonfire light. Under oak trees, toddler mittens pat snow pies. Then at the daddy's, the molded concoction flies. Mom's gag as bits hit targets with a thud. Toilet water meets ice, diarrhea, and mud, sparking a chain reaction with the vomit flood. Giggles lost but lessons found. Do not throw snow that's tinted brown. It's not chocolate that you found. And do not eat yellow color if you spot it. It's not lemonade, just urine dotted. Then showers in April, grows flowers in spring, spreading the dog poop outside as the goldfinches sing. So in the heated summer sunshine at the family barbecue, do not sit the baby's wading pools in the mud made from dog poo. End poem.
Well, there you go. I wasn't expecting that, Deb. You know, a veritable sort of, you know, it's like, you know, the salutary lesson. You know, only play in snow that's white. you know. If it's somewhat discolored, then, you know, leave it alone. It's like a nursery rhyme. It's like a Grimm's nursery rhyme. Hatter, what did you think of Deb's piece?
Yeah, took away my appetite. You're right.
Maybe it's
fitting
them jeans, Hatter.
Yeah, it's a couple of right. Gerald Green and put it right where it was, didn't it, Hatter? It really just, you know, got rid of that whole sort of, you know, sensuality around chocolate in one foul swoop, you know.
You know, it reminded me of the argument a woman and a guy is having. The woman says, "I can do anything you can do." He goes, "No, you can't. Just prove it." I says, "I can write my name in the snow."
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
There you go. I don't know how you want to take that one out of, but anyway. Now Hatter, completely changing the subject. Have you got a topic for next week?
Cheers.
Did you think about it?
You're muting yourself if you're laughing. Yeah.
Sorry, Hannah.
Well,
you know a topic, Hatter?
Oh yeah, ashes. Let's go
ashes.
Ashes.
Yep. We can do that. Yeah. Ashes. Funky. Ashes. Ashes it is.
Yep.
Ashes
cool.
It is. Yep. I like that. Yep. Nice and open.
Yep.
Good topic. Okay. Righto. So, let me then get my prompt. And look, it's really interesting what comes sometimes, I've got to say. I sort of had no idea this one was coming. But anyway, it came, and it is chocolate. In theme, it is a Villanelle, and it's actually not particularly pretty. But anyway, it is what it is, Deb. You know, I've been showing some variation with the Villanelles recently. This is Leather Boots. It goes a little bit like
very
this.
True.
My chocolate boots leather grain steps out into the coloured leaves rare while she strolls down her autumn lane. Tranquil space until left to drain the pretty leaves their tones fair. By chocolate boots, leather grain. She is seeking settlement plain, no interest in flight or dare, while she strolls down her autumn lane. This is her path, a queen does reign, lawyers, sand castles disrepair. By chocolate boots, leather grain. Gather or lie, review arcane, each post delay, defer years wear, while she strolls down her autumn lane. Interest is percentage gain, she will seek until covered stuff. Chocolate boots of leather grain, while she strolls down her autumn lane. End.
Covered bear. Chocolate boots. I love the reference. I'm reading it again. Make sure I got it all here. The mention of the queen, is that just a line filler, is there more reference or more meaning to the queen?
No. Just a traditional reference to her sort of view of the world, and it just sort of seemed to fit. So, but again, very different. Wasn't expecting that when I set out to write it. Deb, what did you think?
That's what I was going to say, and I like the way you're playing with the Villanelles, because you had the creepy one the other day, and now you got this one with like and maybe it's whimsy. I don't, because like there's something about the leather grain and the autumn lane, and the boots. There's the leather boots, but it does look like the chocolate color. So it's funny that you looked at the boots and saw a way to go with the chocolate, which, you know, you go outside the box quite often, which is one of the coolest things. The pretty leaves, their tones fair by chocolate boots, leather grain. She is seeking settlement plain, no interest in flight or dare. Just really, really clever. And These look like they'd be really hard because you have to carry the lines down so many times. But you've gotten, like when you decide that you want to sink your teeth into a particular form, you go all out and you come at it with totally unexpected topics and circumstance, and this would definitely be one of those. And I like that what Hatter mentioned, the queen already. This is her path. A queen does reign, lawyers and castles disrepair, I can't even talk, by chocolate boots, leather grain. And you can think about the things that we've heard on the news, the amount of money being spent on repairs for some of these places and others that are just sitting there rotting, I guess is a good word for it. So you packed a whole lot of seriousness into this with that beautiful rhyme and flow, and then your male angelic voice that was sort of a contrast to the history in it. So it was really cool.
Thanks, Deb. It's a traditional villanelle, and so this is only 8 syllables per line, and so that makes it even tougher because you've only got 8 syllables. You've got the repeating lines, and you've only got the 2 base rhymes to work with. So you've really got to work it pretty hard, or it can be a pretty boring little poem, to be honest. If you get the repeating lines wrong, a villanelle is nothing worse, you know, because it's just, you know, it becomes very ordinary. So you've got to work it a little. If you can work it a bit, it can come. It actually has some really interesting results. I think it's an interesting poem.
Yeah, I was going to say too. It's a perfect example. It's got to be harder to do a storyline in this type of poem, so you used it as a color rather.
Yes,
you that way, right?
Yes,
yeah,
yes, I did, and the key to actually having a story told with this form of poetry is you've got to get your repeating lines working really well for you. If you don't get the repeating lines well, it's a very boring poem.
Yeah, and there is the difference between the storyline. You've got to continue the story to where on this type you've got to repeat a certain line that's got to fit.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hard to do, man.
Yeah.
You did well.
So sometimes for me, having stronger constraints around a poetry type actually makes me front up better to the poem. And it's interesting. Sometimes it does. And I just thought, well, you know, I don't know how this one's going to work, but I'll give it a go. And I only wrote it a couple of hours ago, and I thought it came out okay.
So, in Australia, being that it was influenced by the Queen and the monarchy, how much is the Queen still in the news? Is the Queen still in the news, or is it still
It's gone backwards now to the sort of normal sort of level. Hatter, the whole thing sort of has settled down. I mean, I think there's all sorts of things still to happen. For example, you know, all of our coins will have to change, all of our banknotes will have to change, and that'll happen over the next year or so. There'll be a constant sort of reminder of things happening because of those sorts of things.
How do they do that exactly? Is it just as they're used and go through the banks, they will replace it, or is it something that you want to trade in?
Yes. No, that's exactly what will happen, Hatter. It'll basically be transferred over the space for a couple of years. But the thing probably that's a bigger issue is that Queen Elizabeth was known and trusted and reliable and steady and did all the things that she did over 70 years to build up a reputation of being very, very good at what she did. And now, of course, we've got a person who hasn't had that experience and is learning their way, and it'd be interesting to see how that how countries like Australia react to having a different monarch, and whether that chooses for them to give pause as to whether they should be attaching themselves to a monarchy at all. And there was certainly not a question of that when Queen Elizabeth was there, because she did what she did in such a remarkable way. But, you know, you have somebody change, and it leads you to think about that.
So is Charles basically liked, or is he sort of not liked?
It's hard, because sort of Queen Elizabeth was universally loved, you know,
right.
and admired. And you only get that from doing what she did over such a period of time, whereas people just don't know, and you know, what sort of monarch Charles is going to be like, because he never had to do it before. And so that people are sort of watching, if that makes sense.
Yeah. How old is Charles now?
Oh, great question. Oh, I think he's 60s, is that right? Or 60s?
Yeah. And
he's not.
You may have already heard this, but there's a person who predicted the actual day of her death, and they were correct. And that same person also predicted that, well, two things, that he will only be there for around 3 years, and that the next one will be Harry, not William. This is the guy's prediction anyway.
Oh, That's interesting. I think everything's up for grabs when things change like that. Yeah. And the Queen was such an amazing figure in human history. Really an unparalleled in what she did and what she achieved. So we'll just have to see what Charles now does.
I would think that it was also something that you were all very accustomed to, and now that things are going to change anyway, and it's in question as to what direction it'll go in, it might as well go in one that more people are standing behind, type of thing. And it might change a lot of circumstance, but it's harder. I mean, we don't have a king or a queen, and it changes all the time. And I don't know. I think the actual pomp and circumstance was part of what kept everybody invested before, and the rich tradition. And they're changing the traditions. They're dropping titles and stuff. So, I said, it seems like if things are going to change, no time like the present.
Absolutely. And it is interesting, though, because under the way that succession goes, the next in succession would be, of course, William, Prince William. But his eldest son would be follow after him. And so the line of succession goes Prince William, then Prince George, who's the oldest son, then Prince Charlotte, and then Prince Louis, and then it goes to Harry. So Harry at the minute is fifth in line for the throne, following William and his three children.
Yeah, I would see Ted's comment about the guy that predicted the day and time. My first question, first of all, that can make or break a psychic, if he's that kind of my question is, has he ever suggested or predicted the death of the Queen before?
Apparently he said a few things. I wish I could remember his name that he predicted correctly. And, I mean, as far as the Queen, it was to the exact day. But even Nostradamus predicted that King Charles will abdicate. So, Nostradamus also had made a prediction about the Queen's death as well. I'm trying to see if I can find it. He did it as far as the year. He predicted that she would die in 2022, and the eventual abdication of King Charles has been uncovered as another one of his predictions. And he was also way off topic, but he had also predicted the September 11th events. So Nostradamus is badass. But, yeah.
Anyway.
So, I got it.
So, Hatter, next week we're on Ashes.
Ashes.
And I was thinking I might sing us out, Hatter, with a little bit of Willy Wonka. Because we had that from the Stephen poem. So
yeah,
I was thinking we might do that. Not back very long, but we might do that. And then we will close out. So I have to say thank you to Stephen for calling in. Ali was on the board before. To yourself and to Deb and to Gerald and to Pretty Bird for all of their poems and for contributions for this evening. And what's more, I can't finish because I've got a poem from Crystal Hope here. She just put it on the board. So
I was just going to say that.
Given that, I'm going to go. That's why you go and check, isn't it, Deb? You go and check because you never quite know. So I have got a poem here from Crystal Hope that I am going to read. And I'm going to put on the board. And thank you for listening to Crystal. And it is called Bound for Buried Ashes, a pantoum. And it goes a little bit like this. She was lost in a dark and blackened place, feet buried in ashes, toes engraved. Sobs of soot dripped down her porcelain face, like concrete cement, she stayed. Feet buried in ashes, toes engraved, right mulling her with a caliginous knife. Like concrete cement, she stayed, beckoning, begging for a better life. Fright mulling her with the caliginous knife, doorsteps her soiled eyes dare, beckoning, begging for a better life, her rugged foot tiptoed on the stair. Doorsteps her soiled eyes dare, tread after tread crawl to crashes. Her rugged foot tiptoed on the stair, leading her back to buried ashes. End poem. Very neat. I love repeating lines, Crystal, and that has some beauties. The pantoum form is not dissimilar from the villanelle form, except it's slightly different in the repetitive lines, but you've done a wonderful job there. Deb, did you want to say a few words about Crystal's verse?
I do. Actually, I remember this one, and she won the gold for it. And I remember it to carry down to the final stanza.
Mm.
Doorsteps, her soiled eyes dare, tread after tread, crawl to crashes, her rugged foot tiptoed to the stair, leading her to buried ashes. And, you know, if I would have looked at it real quick, I didn't realize she had put it there, but we should leave it there because it's actually... She saw the topic board after I changed it to Hatter's topic because I'm not fast. So it would be cool if we saved it and read it again next week, and maybe she could even call and read it for us at that time. But it's a beautiful pantoum.
Yeah, right. Yeah, really, really cool. Hatter, did you want to say a few words?
Yeah, I just a question that doesn't really need to be answered, but I'm looking at the repeated line. Now, you think that was used as a poetic convenience, or you think that was a planned structure?
It's absolutely a pantoum.
Absolutely.
It is.
A planned structure is part of the pantoum. Yeah.
Cool.
And you take line 2 and 4 and bring it down and make it line 1 and 3. There's a couple other steps, too, but... You should wind up seeing each line.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's what I was looking for. Now I see it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wow.
And interestingly, a form that was adapted by French poets from a Malaysian form. So it actually comes out of Asia, unlike many of the poetic forms which were designed in Europe. This one actually wasn't designed in Europe. It was designed in Asia, in Malaysia.
Say that again.
Cool fact. It's a form that was designed in Malaysia, Hatta.
Oh, okay.
Not in Europe.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
There you go. So I think you owe us a song,
and then we got to get out of here.
Exactly. So I'm doing the song, and then we're getting out of here. So this is Pure Imagination by Gene Wilder. And it goes a little bit like this. Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination. We'll begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it. Want to change the world, there's nothing to it. There's no life, I know, to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be. End song. And with that, we say good night to everybody. Night Hatter, night Death. And we'll catch you next week for Ashes.
Great song, great show. Love and respect, guys.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, have fun. Thanks, Hatter. Okay, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
See you next week. Bye, everybody.